Everyone, it's Ryan Ballingy. Welcome into a new edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. We're going to try and cut down the intro a little bit each week and get right into the meat of the broadcast, and we'll tell you all the other ways that you can follow us and follow our show and all that other crap. We'll do that later at the end of the program, but we want to dive right into the meat of things each week. And this week, we've had this really interesting conversation on Twitter, which is at Ryan Ballingy if you want to follow me. And the kind of crux of the conversation has been this notion of a feud between Rory McIlroy and Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler, and whether or not that is merited, whether or not there's ever going to be one, and what it takes for there to be an actual rivalry. And all of that has obviously unfolded since April, because then Jordan Spieth won the Masters, blew the field away, tied the 72-hole scoring record, set the 36 and 54-hole scoring records, and just was a dominating figure that week. Rory McIlroy had a very nice finish, but wasn't really in the conversation, obviously, to win the green jacket and complete the career Grand Slam. And then we, the golf media, collectively wowed by Spieth's performance, was ready to declare him the new king of the sport at 21. He's going to take over everything, and oh, you're just Rory McIlroy, you're 25, turn 26, you're done. Here comes the new future, and if anything, here comes the new future to put down the foreigner and make sure he never wins another major. And then, of course, Rory McIlroy sees this, is not too happy about all of the accolades that Spieth is getting, and obviously the amnesia that we collectively have as media in forgetting that McIlroy won two majors last summer and has four altogether before the age of 26. And he goes out and wins the match play, not without his best stuff. He's not playing his best golf. He just finds a way to win matches, which was really stunning. I mean, it's an incredible win, and it shows a lot about who McIlroy is and how he's driven and what really moves him and what gets him to the finish line and to close out big tournaments. And then you have Ricky Fowler, who between the first McIlroy win and his last one last weekend, comes in, finishes the Players' Championship, an incredible 8-under par in his final 10 holes, including the playoff, which was 4 holes. He played 6-under par in the final 6 holes, played the final 4 holes in 11 strokes, and all of a sudden it seemed like there's an epiphany for Ricky Fowler where maybe this kid can figure out at the same age as McIlroy, they're the same age, that it could all click, and that those top five finishes last year in all four majors, becoming only the third guy in the history of major championship golf to do it, and only the first not to actually win a major in doing it. Well, all of a sudden he's going to win the fifth major, and then comes real majors, and then, oh man, now you know this is golf's wet dream at this point, because now we've got Rory and Jordan and Ricky, and they're all just playing great, and it's all going to be wonderful, and we're all going to get everything that we ever wanted. And then Rory McIlroy goes out at Wells Fargo, and neither of those two guys, Spieth or Fowler, were there. Fowler was in the Bahamas or wherever with his girlfriend, who apparently has no problem wearing nothing in public. And Spieth, who is in Texas, probably working in a soup kitchen or something, knowing his goody-good reputation. And he just goes out and puts on a clinic. And he was perfectly fine for the first two rounds, perfectly normal, and then just steps on everybody's throat with a course record setting, 61, 11 under par, Quail Hollow, which is a major championship venue in 2 years' time. It is not a joke of a golf course. It is a very difficult golf course. And McIlroy goes out and beats his own course record. He had a share with Brendan DeYoung, which I can't believe he had that distinction. And all of a sudden, it's over. I mean, the tournament's over. He's 4 ahead of Webb Simpson going to the final round. There's no way Webb Simpson's going to put him that kind of charge, even though he's a member at Quail Hollow. And he wins by 7, and the final round was, he was just kind of taking a lap around, like, I guess if I just don't put in the water 5 or 6 times, I should win, and he did just that. And on one hole, was it the 16th hole, 510-yard par 4 into the wind, he gets driver 365 yards, it's gap wedge to 3 feet, and he makes it look like your run-of-the-mill 340-yard par 4 at a Muni golf course with no bunkers, just straight away. It was unbelievable. And I think McIlroy was trying to send a message. In fact, I know he was trying to send a message with those two wins in the last 3 starts. And that is, I'm the best golfer of this generation, and you're going to have to do a whole lot more than win a major or a major light to take that away from me. And this is why I'm the best golfer in the world. And I get the assertion, and I think it kind of snapped everybody back to reality to go, okay, yeah, you're definitely the best player in the world. You've definitely showed it. And I think not so much Fowler recognizing this, at least verbally, but Spieth certainly did after he was a disaster in their two rounds together along with Jason Day at the Players Championship, where he basically said, I don't think I'm on McIlroy's level at this point. And he's right. He's not ever going to be. That's not who Jordan Spieth is. Jordan Spieth is not going to hit the ball 365 yards off the tee and hit a gap wedge to 3 feet. He's going to hit it 295 off the tee, hit a full pitching wedge to 3 feet, and then sink the putt. That's the difference between those two guys, and that's what's going to be the, if there is a rivalry, that's going to be the crux of it. Power and streakiness versus consistency and a great short game. That's it. And if Fowler wants to get in the mix, he does have the power. I mean, he hit 336 yards on the 18th tee, from the 18th tee, in the playoff after he hit a 331-yard drive on the final hole of regulation to set up a birdie that got him into the playoff in the first place. So that's a little bit of a different. Those guys are more comparable in the style of play, where they're not very big guys, but, man, they hit it a long way. Spieth is a little bit bigger, but not that much bigger than those guys. He hits it a fairly long distance, but not very long. His short game is just far superior to theirs, except when McIlroy gets a 3-minute putting lesson from Dave Stockton, which is exactly what we said on Twitter, again, at Ryan Bellinger, needed to happen for McIlroy to get his game right and get it ready to go heading into the U.S. Open. And there was. And you saw the demonstration of that. When he gets locked in with Stockton, you can see the results. You saw it at the 2011 U.S. Open. You saw it at the 2012 PGA Championship. You see it at Wells Fargo. When he feels good over the putter, everything is fine because there's no earthly reason to play away from flags. None. Because he can stick it close and he can make the putt, even if it's a tough one. So McIlroy is on a different level. And so the reaction in the last 3 weeks or so is, okay, well, if McIlroy is clearly better than everybody else, should we put the brakes on declaring the rivalry here between Spieth and Fowler? I think McIlroy is trying to make that point, and I think he's got a good one. And it leads to another point that's kind of the broader purpose of this podcast this week, which is another tweet I sent saying, okay, well, let's analyze not just this particular 2 month, 3 month stretch of golf history, and let's look at a broader scope and say, well, okay, we've established that the big three was a great rivalry, that it was so special, and that was the golden age of golf because those three guys were winning major championships at the same time, and they're all just so great, and, you know, it was perfect. That was the best rivalry there ever was. That's what the epitome is. Has golf had anything close to that in the intervening basically 50 years? Because if you take a look at the major tallies for Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer, Gary Player, so 18 for Jack, 7 for Arnold, 9 for Gary Player. We look at the runner-ups and where these guys finished in the major championships. And obviously, there's the lore here that in the Masters tournament in the 60s, these guys basically just handed green jackets to each other. And that's the case. I mean, if you look at really, I mean, Palmer starts his run in 58 when he wins. And then you kind of go down the list from there. So 58, Palmer wins in 60. Now we're really starting to talk here, but Palmer wins in 62. So he's had his three by the time the rivalry starts, even though we've kind of put him there. And Jack Nicklaus was nowhere in there because he's not really a professional at that point. Nicklaus wins in 63, Palmer in 64, Nicklaus in 65 and 66. Then you have some intervening years, obviously, where there's really, you know, a bunch of guys kind of in the desert of winning. You have Gabe Brewer, Bob Golby, George Archer. Billy Casper was great. Charles Cootey. So for about 4 years in there after that really nice run from 62 to 66, where Nicklaus wins 3-2. Then you have to wait until 1972 before Nicklaus gets back in there. Because, and at this point, Palmer has not won another Masters. It's pretty much over at that point for Palmer. So now Nicklaus is in there, and Nicklaus wins in 72. Tommy Aaron wins in 73. I don't know how that happened. In 74, Gary Player wins. In 1975, Jack Nicklaus wins. And then it kind of changes, because then we don't see another Masters win from Nicklaus until 1986. In the intervening time, you get Ray Floyd, Tom Watson, obviously great players. Gary Player wins in 78. That's his last Masters title. And in all of those, Jack Nicklaus rarely finishes second to one of the big three beyond those initial years. So, I mean, even look at it back in, starting in 62. So Player is second in 62. He has to wait all of that time to get his Masters. He does. I mean, that's unbelievable. And, you know, Gary Player won at 61, obviously, but get his second Masters. So, you know, you get Gary Player in there, and then you really don't see him in the winner's circle again for another decade. But you do get him as the runner-up in 62, in 65. So that's a nice run. You get Nicklaus as the runner-up in 64, 71 to Charles Coody, whatever. And then you look at the rest of the way, and you know, it's not really anything to speak of. So you got these guys trading major championships, but they're not always facing off finishing 1-2-3 or 1-2. And so how do you describe that as a rivalry if they're not just trading firsts and seconds? You know, trading wins is great. I mean, but it wasn't year after year after year, this guy against this guy. You know, there was really only one year, 1965, where you had all three in the mix, and it wasn't even that close, because Nicklaus wins by 9 shots at 17 under par, 271, and Palmer and Player finish joint runner-up 9 behind. 9! So, I mean, you never really got the payoff. The closest payoff you get is in 62, where Palmer beats Player in a playoff. The rest of it is, it's really not there. It's just not. And this is the basis of Masters lore, is that these guys traded these green jackets for the basically better part of a decade, even though it was really a 7-year stretch, and most of it was Palmer and Nicklaus, and Nicklaus won the latter half, obviously. Palmer won the earlier half. Player gets in there with one. That is the basis upon which Masters lore is built. And so if that's the gold standard, then what the hell else is everything? I mean, So then I threw out the question, well, what are the potential good rivalries? The only good rivalries in the sport since this, and including the big three, involve Jack Nicklaus. They really do. And you look at Jack, the big three. You could put him in the case with Tom Watson, obviously. If you look at all the majors Tom Watson won, I mean, in 1977, Jack Nicklaus was the runner-up there. You know, if you look at all of the majors that Watson won, all 8 of them, and obviously 5 of those were open championship victories, and you look at who wound up finishing in second in those, then it kind of starts, I don't know. I mean, look at his first major win. 75 Open Championship, Jack Newton. 77 Masters, Nicklaus, runner-up. 77 Open Championship, Nicklaus, runner-up, duel in the sun. Open Championship 1980, Lee Trevino, okay. 81 Masters, Johnny Miller, Jack Nicklaus. 82 U.S. Open, Jack Nicklaus. Yeah, so Jack was pretty much, without Tom Watson, Jack Nicklaus probably has 20-some-odd majors at this point. But if you look the other way, you look at the majors Jack won, Tom Watson doesn't finish second. No, he doesn't finish second. So Watson was really the only guy that consistently stopped, was the foil for Jack Nicklaus, which makes, in my opinion, that rivalry greater, not only because it happened multiple times, but it spanned 5 years. I mean, you have 2 in 77, you have the 81 Masters, you have the 82 U.S. Open. And really got away with that because of the incredible chip on 17. So otherwise, Nicholas has 19. I mean, two shots in 81 Masters, fine. One stroke and two strokes in the first two majors, and you know, the ones in 77. So easily, Nicholas could have 21 majors where Tom Watson just not there. And Tom Watson didn't win on the PGA Tour for his first 100 starts, basically. So Watson figured it out, got it quick, and then that was gone. And that was it. Pretty amazing. And you could throw Trevino in there. I think that makes sense to throw Trevino in there. Because if you look at Trevino's major wins, you know, you kind of look at those, and then you go, well, Nicholas is a lot here, too, of his six major wins. So let's look at that. 1971 U.S. Open, Jack Nicklaus, playoff, Marion. 1972 Open Championship, one stroke over Jack Nicklaus. 1974 PGA Championship, one stroke over Jack Nicklaus. Huh. Interesting. U.S. Open, 1968. Four strokes, actually. Jack Nicklaus. So there aren't many majors there where Jack wasn't the runner-up. But again, Trevino doesn't finish runner-up very often, or even at all to Jack. Because if you look at all the players that finished runner-up to Jack in the majors, you don't see either of those guys, Watson or Trevino. What made the rivalry is that Jack was always there. Otherwise, whatever. But if it were not for Trevino getting three majors there? Four majors? And then you get Tom Watson. Now we're looking at 25 majors for Jack Nicklaus. That tells you how good Jack Nicklaus was. That he made the careers of other players because he was there so often. I mean, if you replace all of Watson's, you know, those major championship victories over, you know, like Bruce Crampton, who amazingly finished second to Nicklaus in four major championships in a 4-year span, it's just different. The lore of the game is different. And then you go, okay, well, Tiger never really had a great rival. And you look at all the guys that finished second to him in the majors or where he finished second. And I mean, the names of guys come to mind, Tom Spiore, Miguel Angel Jimenez, guys we love, but they're not doing anything. Colin Montgomery, Sean McKeel won a major, finished runner-up of the 06 PGA. That made no sense. Woody Austin, Rocco Mediate was 45 of that epic U.S. Open duel. Here's the takeaway from all of this, and we'll get into this a little bit more with Tiger and Jack in a second. The takeaway from this is that golf doesn't produce rivalries, really, without Jack Nicklaus, for one, and two, in general, because that's just not the way the sport lays out. Guys don't finish 1-2 very often against each other in majors. You might finish 1-4, 1-5, 1-7, 2-6. But if you didn't win, it apparently doesn't count. And if you don't finish second, no one remembers it. So top tens in majors, no one thinks about those things. And again, this is Jack's influence. 18 major victories, 19 second-place finishes. Could have been 37 majors, more or less, if he took 40 less putts in his life. More or less. That's amazing. That's amazing. And you don't think about top tens in the majors for Jack because he made it so often into the medal stand. Into the medal stand. I mean, I'm not even talking about just the 18 wins, and then you've got all the runner-ups. And if you look at his incredible record in the major championships, I mean, put them all together, you have 18 wins, 19 runners-up, 9 third-place finishes, so really not that far distant either, so 28 opportunities. He could have 46 major championships, the coulda, woulda, shouldas. He had 73 top 10s, 73. This guy was there so often that was the reason there was any rivalry in golf. He's the only reason, because no one ever stepped up to take on Tiger on a consistent basis. There's only a couple of people that were even really consistently in the picture when Tiger was winning majors. Only two guys have ever finished runner-up multiple times to Tiger in majors. Ernie Els in 2000 at the U.S. Open and Open Championship, so he kind of had the runner-up, was going for the runner-up slam, didn't get it. Then you have Chris DeMarco in the 05 Masters in the playoff, and then the 06 Open Championship where he was pretty distantly back, basically halfway through the final round at Liverpool. So, you know, that's the end there. Look at the names. Whatever. So golf really hasn't had a great rivalry in 50 years. Maybe 40. I'll say 40 because Jack and Watson were very good. So that really ended in 82 or so. So it's been 33 years since there's been a good major in the, you know, good rivalry in the sport. So we're setting ourselves up to get disappointed if we're putting stock in all of a sudden these three guys, McIlroy and Spieth and Fowler, winning majors and finishing second to one another and being so close and cutthroat and hating each other and all that good stuff. There's not, the odds tell you there's not another big three coming. And not only will it not come, but the two, there will be two guys in this equation who don't do all that great. And I will leave the money to you to figure out who you want to put it on. But I would not put my money on Ricky Fowler winning the feud, if there is one. I would put my money on McIlroy because he's already got a four-major head start to Spieth's one and Fowler's zero at this point. Spieth could win 7, 8, 9 majors, and then he could be Palmer player in that scenario. But if you look at the way it plays out, it kind of looks like McIlroy's going to be the guy who's going to win 10, 12 majors, maybe more. I mean, who knows? But he's going to win the feud. So why are we putting so much stock in this? Why do we care about having the one-on-one rivalry if it never produces itself? This is not what golf is. Golf is not a sport where there's A and B. There's A through like triple Z if you look at the fields. So there's 100 and some odd guys in pretty much every major championship except the Masters, which borders on 100 these days. So, you know, obviously most of those guys are never going to be a part of the conversation consistently. You throw out 80, 90% of them. So that leaves like 10 guys in an era that were really consistently good. And then you kind of cut it down to 5 or 6 because of the major championships. And those are the guys that get in the Hall of Fame, or at least should get in the Hall of Fame. But those guys almost rarely ever have consistent battles against one another where it's A versus B coming down the stretch of a major. It's, well, you know, B got pretty close on this one, but A won by 5 over second place, and that guy was 10 back. So, and then B wins 1 by 1 over A, and oh, that was great, wish it would happen again, but it's never going to happen again. We need to get out of our heads this notion that golf is a sport of one-on-one. The only situation where that happens is match play, and we don't play that in this country or for major championships anymore. So, thanks PGA Championship. So if that's the case, then why don't we just enjoy it for what it is? We don't call it a rivalry. We call them contemporaries. Rory, Jordan, and Ricky are contemporaries. You may be able to throw Jason Day in there at some point. You could probably find another guy to get in there. Maybe Justin Thomas figures it out. Maybe Patrick Rogers is as good as advertised. He finished tied for second at Wells Fargo. Maybe he's going to put it together. You never know. But I don't think we need to identify rivalries because the ones we already identified as rivalries really weren't. At best, they were just Jack Nicklaus showing up again and again and again, again and again and again and again and again. It's Jack. He's golf. So if anything, this study I've been doing over the last couple of days to try and figure out why we're so obsessed with golf rivalries only makes me think more highly of Jack Nicklaus. Because he was just there so damn often. Which leads into a very brief discussion that I want to address. And I addressed it with a post at thegolfnewsnet.com, golfnewsnet.com, whatever, you know, the or without the. And it was based on a conversation the Fort Worth Star-Telegram had with Dan Jenkins. And Dan Jenkins is a legend, and we have to preface every time we say Dan Jenkins as legendary. And he is. But he's kind of lost a little mustard on the fastball. And he's not very happy with Tiger Woods. They've had some public issues over the years, mostly in writing. And for whatever reason, talking about the modern generation, talking about Jordan Spieth in this interview with the Star-Telegram, Jenkins goes on to say, Tiger beat a lot of nobodies to win most of his majors. Yeah, there was Phil and Els around, in and out. But go back and look at who was second to him in those majors and tell me where they are now. And that's what we did. We looked at all the guys that finished second, the Tiger and the majors. There were 13 different guys. And, I mean, yeah, that, you know, that's it. 13 guys. And if you look at it and you look at all of them and you go over their accomplishments, most of them didn't win majors. Garcia hasn't, Jimenez, Bjorn, DeMarco twice, Montgomery, Woody Austin, Rocco Mediate. These guys didn't. 12 combined majors for the 13 guys that finished second to Tiger Woods in the majors. So that's about one each. And most of that is thanks to Ernie Els winning four and Phil Mickelson winning five because he was runner-up at the O2 U.S. Open. And then you look at, well, okay, he's trying to talk about the modern era. But the gold standard is Jack Nicklaus. So let's look at the guys Jack Nicklaus beat. Obviously, he had more major championships. He also had more second-place finishers. More often than not, there wasn't just one person finishing second to Jack. There were two or three guys. There were cases where there were four guys. We mentioned Bruce Crampton earlier. He never won a major championship. He finished second to Jack four times. He has no majors. Arnold Palmer finished second three times out of those 18 major victories. And then you look at other guys. Gary Player was second just one time. Tom Watson's not on the list. Johnny Miller actually makes the list. But Lee Trevino doesn't make the list. And then you look at the other guys. Tony Lima, one major. Dave Reagan, Zippo. Gabe Brewer, one. Backed into it. Tommy Jacobs, zero. Doug Sanders. I mean, the 70 Open literally killed Doug Sanders. Is killing him. Dave Thomas. Billy Casper got in there, which is cool. Bobby Mitchell, Tom Weisskopf, unfulfilled potential. Johnny Miller got in for two. Ben Crenshaw got in for two. Ray Floyd was a runner-up. Tom Kite was the only guy who was the runner-up for both for Tiger and Jack Nicklaus, and was the last guy, along with Greg Norman, to finish runner-up to Nicklaus in a major, and the first guy to finish runner-up to Tiger Woods in a major. That's kind of a cool straddle. You have Nicklaus in there, Simon Owen, Aseo Aoki, Andy Bean, all guys who you know from Champions Tour days, but probably don't remember otherwise. So, okay. Those guys had more majors combined, 32 for all of the guys that were in there, about 1.6 majors for the total runners up there. Okay, so 32 majors for 20 guys, 1.6 each. So more or less not quite a major better than Tiger Woods, and most of that is thankful to having Palmer and Player around. And then you look at the guys who have finished runner-up in the last 16 major championships. We just kind of picked, all right, let's look at the last 4 years. And if you look at it, a lot of duds in there too. Justin Rose is a major, Spieth is a major. Phil Mickelson has been runner-up three times in a major championship in the last 16 played. That's pretty remarkable for a guy who never seems to finish very well anymore. You look at Junot Splix. Louis Oosthuizen has a major. Eric Compton. Ricky Fowler's been runner-up twice, no majors. Jason Day, runner-up twice, no majors. Graham McDowell's won. Michael Thompson, wow, none. Garcia, none. Stenson, none. Scott, one. Johnson, none. Guys who don't win majors don't win majors. They finish second in majors. That's why they're second place. That's why they're not great. And the great ones not only win, they win prolifically to the tune of four or more. That's what we define as greatness. If you get into six, that seems to be the modern standard. That's the Faldo line. If you can win as many majors as Nick Faldo, you are considered a great in the sport. We may move that down to the Mickelson line if Mickelson never wins a sixth major, but that's the standard. So if you look at that, it's really it might be the Seve line. That's five. Seve line. Seve Phil line. If you win five majors, you are great. Anything less than that, you're not there. So, most of these guys aren't there. The only guy that is there is Phil. He's the line, remember? So, Jenkins is wrong. He's just wrong. But he's also right. He's right that Tiger beat a bunch of nobodies. So did Jack Nicklaus. So does everybody else who wins a major championship. It's the way they work. They're just golf tournaments, and if you add them together at the end, you might find a couple of consistent characters who finish runner-up. In this case, in the last 16, it's Phil and Ricky Fowler are the story. In Jack Nicklaus's career, it's Arnold Palmer and Bruce Crampton, Doug Sanders, and Tom Kite, the only guys to finish runner-up multiple times to Jack Nicklaus in major championships. So it's Palmer and Crampton, really. Whatever. For Tiger Woods, it is Chris DeMarco and Ernie Els. Two guys, maybe three, that are in the conversation more often than not for the greats of the sport. So, the conclusion of all this is to say the notion of rivalries in golf is stupid, and it's one we should do away with, because in the modern deep era of golf talent, and Jenkins is right, talent is deeper today than even when Tiger Woods was at the peak of his powers and when Jack Nicklaus was at the peak of his powers. It's deeper than ever. So it's going to be more difficult to win majors. It's also meaning to be more difficult to establish rivalries. So let's kill it. There are no more rivalries in golf. Until otherwise proven, we don't have one. Rory doesn't have a rival. Spieth doesn't have a rival until there's even a single major where they both finish 1-2. You know, they're 1-2. Somewhere in there. So that's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. We'd love to get your reviews, particularly the 5-star variety on iTunes. If you drop us a note, leave us a question, we'll be happy to answer it on the air in the review. It's got to be a 5-star, otherwise you don't get that treatment. You can also follow me on Twitter at Ryan Ballingy. You can follow Golf News Net on Twitter and Facebook at Ryan Ballingy and Facebook.com/GolfNewsNet and Twitter.com/GolfNewsNet. Next week on the show, we'll talk a little bit about Colonial, but we'll focus more on the BMW PGA Championship, which is the European Tour's flagship event. We'll see if anything interesting comes out of that, and if Rory McIlroy can successfully defend the title he won a year ago to jumpstart his season and really get back into the swing of things in terms of being an all-time great in the sport. Until then, I'm Ryan Ballingy saying thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week on the 19th Hole Golf Show.